Good evening, everyone. Today is Wednesday, August 2nd, 2017, and welcome to a new edition of The Beacon. Once again, we're live on The Beacon. We're online on The Beacon, joining you once again this evening, Wednesday, August 2nd. I am Sandy Murillo, and with me is our co-host, Brett Shishkoff. Brett, how are you today?
I am doing fantastic. How about yourself?
Well, can't complain. It's already Wednesday. It's hump day.
Yep.
You know, we're closer to Friday, so it's all good.
Yeah, it's actually my family's vacation coming up this week, and so my family's got like a timeshare, and so they're getting ready to head out there on Friday, and they have it for the entire week. So our family is trying to, you know, figure out how we're gonna spread the schedule around with all the kids being out there at different times and whatnot.
So, oh, really? Where are they going?
We have a timeshare out in a little small town called Norway, Illinois.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's probably from here, maybe an hour and a half away.
Sure.
But it's nice. It's got a couple pools. They got a miniature golf course. There's horseback riding. They also just added an indoor water park as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a nice resort that we've been going to since I think I was in high school is when we started. So it's been in our family for quite a while, and we've been meaning to try and trade it in for one of the other locations that, as part of the organization, that we go through. And so, one of these years we'll probably try one of the other ones, but mainly because it's so close to home, it's kind of a staycation, I guess is what they call those.
Yeah, it's a nice small, you know, staycation,
yep.
Getaway, mm-hmm. And hopefully the weather will cooperate, you know, it'll be nice. And
yep, hopefully.
Be able to enjoy. Speaking of the weather, Brett, yesterday we had a pretty big storm. It lasted for a few minutes, but it was actually pretty intense, you know, in the afternoon here in Chicago. Were you here when that?
Yeah, I was here. And Poet, my guide dog, for those of you who don't know, I actually have a guide dog. Got him a couple months ago, so we're over the two-month mark. And he doesn't like the thunderstorms. He hears the thunder, and he was trying to hide under my chair, under the desk, anywhere he could find in my little office, a place to have more over his head. He definitely was a bit worried. But then we left, and it was just drizzling, and then by the time we got home, it was nice and sunny out. And so I guess up by me where I live, they didn't even get any rain. And I live on the north side of Chicago, and so they were like, oh, there was a thunderstorm? And I said, yeah, a pretty bad one. You know, we had some trees that kind of their branches blew down. I got smacked in the face a couple times walking home because there were a few branches that weren't there coming to work that were down after work. And so, yeah, I got smacked in the face with some cold leaves and kind of did the little shimmy shake that Poet did. I kind of did one myself, and he looked back at me and was like, hey, that's my move.
It's my move. It's not you.
Yep.
Yeah, as you know, I live out in the south suburbs, and from what I hear, not a single drop of rain either, so it's...
It was just a lighthouse.
It was just a lighthouse.
We needed a good cleaning.
Specifically to the lighthouse.
Yep.
So, yeah, well, speaking of the lighthouse, we have got great information on this week's edition of The Beacon, as always. Bill Jurek, our host, will be talking about the Seniors Program with the Seniors Program Director. And I will be doing a very insightful segment about a new legislation that will have an impact, a positive impact on people with disabilities. Brett has an interesting segment about new developments with technology, and Luke Scribben, which we'll talk more about, he will also be informing us about technology. So everyone, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is Mike Ditka. I'm asking you to make a New Year's resolution to combat vision loss by getting treatment at the Chicago Lighthouse's world-class rehabilitation center. Our highly recommended doctors can assist individuals of all ages with reduced vision caused by any eye disease, either congenital or acquired. For your convenience, there are satellite clinics located in Glenview, Elk Grove Village, Flossmoor, Northwestern Memorial Hospital, and our newest site, Tradewinds in Merrillville, Indiana. To make an appointment, call 312-997-3686. That's 312-997-3686.
This is Dr. Janet Slick, President and CEO of the Chicago Lighthouse. We're celebrating 110 years of changing lives in 2016. The Chicago Lighthouse provides a community of comprehensive care for people who are blind, visually impaired, disabled, and veterans.
We have a nice seniors program at the Chicago Lighthouse, and Lorene O'Donnell, right?
Correct.
Is the director of that agency. Welcome to the show. It's nice to have you with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
We don't hear often enough about what your program does, but from what I understand, since you have assumed the helm, or the rudder, as they say, it's taken off. You've really got a lot of people involved.
I do. I have worked with older adults for basically since I graduated, so we won't say how many years that is, but it's been quite some
just
time.
Just a couple.
Yeah.
That's right.
But when I came here, you know, it had been on a pause, and my goal was to get it up and running, and here we are today.
How long have you been here?
About 2.5 years.
2.5 years, mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that's, but you must have done some marvelous things to attract all the people you do. What are some of the programs? We were just talking about smartphones and the computer pad, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. What are you doing to try and bring the seniors up to date?
Just on the iPads and computers?
The iPad, the computers, you know, the smartphones.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. Technology.
So, technology. We do work on technology. So in the iPad, iPhone classes, what we like to do is just kind of educate them on all the accessibility that is possible.
Sure.
And so we show them, we try to do hands-on. So we do smaller classes. We have a limit of 6 so that we can really make sure everyone's getting hands-on experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if they own one, we do ask them to bring it. That way we can teach them on their own device.
Right.
So when they go home, we give them homework.
Oh, well, I'd be the one that said, no, I don't have one. No.
In the beginning, if it's very new, they have it, but they really haven't used it.
Sure. 'Cause
sometimes family members will buy them one.
Right.
But they really don't get the training. So, you know, we might start with them just coming and working with us on our iPads.
Right.
But eventually we ask them to bring it so we can get them set up so that they can use it when
sure.
they're home.
And you were saying you can teach them how to get the phones to talk to them.
Yeah.
Or the iPads to talk to them.
Correct. Yeah, and accessibility, you can do talking, you can do Zoom, it can spell words, it can spell, you know, it can record you. We have even, you know, for some that know Braille and are really good at typing Braille,
mm-hmm.
you can even do that instead of normal typing on your iPad or sure. iPhone. So
can you plug in a conventional keyboard?
Yes, you can.
You can. So you can. You teach them all ways.
Correct.
To do that.
Yes.
What are some of the other things you do?
The computer classes are typically in the afternoon after iPad.
Sure.
And we teach them, depending upon what level they're at, we have talking typer for our beginners. We
right.
get them to learn the keyboard again.
Right.
But then for those that's, you know, are vision impaired, have some sight left and really want to work on the computer, there's a program called Zoom Text.
I've heard of that, yeah.
Yeah, it makes, you know, the screen larger so that it can fit their sight. And then we have JAWS for those that have lost their sight. JAWS is a program that just like I was saying, for iPad, it will talk to you.
Right.
So you have to know that keyboard because there's a lot of keys to, you know, that's how you run it.
It's right.
The keyboard. But it's a wonderful program and can give them access to any and everything.
You know what I found out?
What's that?
That even the engineers that designed a lot of this stuff, they use the key method.
Oh, yeah.
They don't use the mouse.
Because it's quicker.
Yeah.
You're not shifting.
Right.
You're just on the keyboard, and there's so many shortcuts.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. There really are. Now, besides computer work, what else are we doing for elderly crowd to keep them interested in coming back?
Oh, we have lots of different programs. We try for social, mm-hmm. obviously. We like to have fun here.
Sure, yeah.
We do physical. We have exercise classes. We also have a program called Fit and Strong. It's a grant that we received.
Mm-hmm.
It's for, we work with the University of Illinois at Chicago because they developed a program called Fit and Strong.
Okay.
And it's for older adults and osteoarthritis symptoms.
Okay.
Which is very common as we age. You know, any pain from your lower back down and your joints, you're a perfect candidate.
For that, yeah.
Yeah, so, but
how about for a bad shoulder? No.
We do work on upper in there as well, but the focus is lower. But yeah, we use bands for the arms.
Yeah.
So, hey, another program, you can join us.
Yeah, there you go.
But it's really nice because it focuses on that. And what we're trying to do is have the class include vision impaired seniors.
Right.
So that's why we're hosting the programs here with our clients. And it's been going great. We're just about finished with this third session. We have one left. So if you're interested.
You better hurry.
You better hurry.
That's it.
It's a wonderful class. We've had such success that I think it's something you don't want to miss out on.
Do you see a program like that? Brings in more people.
Yes.
They stay for other programs then?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I plan the programs, I like to plan it more than just one because many of them are taking paratransit.
Sure.
So I really want to make it their trip worthwhile.
Right.
So, for example, every other Tuesday, we start off with the social coffee club. Get them all caffeinated and excited.
Yeah.
And then we go into exercise class, an hour long exercise class.
Sure.
We take a break, and then in the afternoon, that's when Philip, our art expert, does an art exploration.
Oh, what's that all about?
So those are the programs. Every week, Philip Cameron discusses, you know, art topics. Each Tuesday afternoon, he comes. It's a different topic every Tuesday,
mm-hmm.
and he really listens to the seniors that are in, you know, the classes previously,
right.
And here's what they're looking for, what they want to learn, and it's extremely diverse. So he does, you know, music, he does architecture, and...
Okay, makes sense, yeah.
You know, even music artists or actors.
Sure.
Yeah, so the nice thing is he's very open to hearing what they're interested in,
mm-hmm.
and then he does the research, and he's extremely intelligent, and the seniors love him.
I'm sure that you've guys all been to that bank down Roosevelt Road for the seniors. For the disabled.
The bank?
There's a bank that was specifically designed years ago for people with disabilities.
I never
knew. The counters are low.
Okay.
So that a wheelchair can wheel up to them. And take care of business. They have contrasting colors so that someone with some vision can go in there and know where different things are. You may want to mention it to them.
Yeah. Do you know the name of the bank?
Not offhand.
I'll do some research to figure out. Maybe they'll come do a little.
They can do a presentation.
Yeah.
Or you can have a field day.
Okay.
You know, speaking of field days. Do you take them out on field days?
Yeah, speaking of, just coming up in August 15th, we're going on a yacht cruise.
Oh, are you going to do the yacht cruise?
Yes, we are doing the yacht cruise.
Don't do what that crew did off of Milwaukee.
Oh.
For the Mackinac race.
No, don't worry about that.
Okay.
We're the Chicago Yacht Cruise. The club is hosting us. So we will be taking a bus down to them.
Mm-hmm.
They're providing kindly a nice lunch for them. And then all the cruise owners are going to take us all out on their boats and explore Lake Michigan.
That's cool.
Yeah, it is cool. I know they've done it in the past few years. And let me just say, there's a long waiting list.
Is there really? Yeah.
There is, because so many are so interested in it because it's a great time.
So there's some. Do you do something every day, or is it like 2-3 days a week?
We've gotten to a point where it's just about every day of the month.
Really?
Yeah. The nice thing is, like I said, I try to plan multiple programs, at mm-hmm. least two a day, so that it's worth their trip. But I want them to have fun when they're here. I don't want them just staying because they're here.
Right.
You know, so the educational programs, the fitness programs, and as I start to plan, they're very open. They talk with me often, and if they have a suggestion that I can make happen, I'm happy to do so.
Sure.
Yeah.
It sounds like you got things covered. Do you still give them once a month? They used to do a lunch.
Yes.
Do you still do it or no?
Yes, we do. It's typically the last Friday of the month.
Okay.
And we call it a birthday luncheon, but everyone's welcome, and then we just celebrate whoever was born that month.
Uh-huh.
And it's a wonderful lunch. It goes from 11 to 12:30. And afterwards, we've had presenters, like we had a Cleopatra. So she came fully dressed as Cleopatra.
Right.
But then she told the story. So it's really fun and exciting, and but then she's educating us as well.
Right.
But then we've had musical people come in. We watch audio descriptive movies often.
Mm-hmm.
So we like to
mix it up.
Yeah, mix it up so it doesn't get boring.
Exactly. Yeah, and the lunches are good.
Lunches are good. They love the luncheons.
Okay. Is it from the cafeteria?
Yeah, through the catering company we use through the cafeteria.
Uh-huh.
I work with Gabby in the cafeteria to kind of pick out a
She's
yummy meal.
Too. Yeah.
And the best is the dessert, obviously.
They all like the dessert. I like the dessert too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but that's cool. If they want to get more about the program, Lorraine, how do they do it?
They can call me. They can email me. My phone number is 312-997-3670. And we also have an assistant who helps part-time. She's Megan Frankenbach.
Okay.
So either of us could get a call. They could call the main number and just ask for the seniors program, and we'll be happy to talk to them.
Where do you meet? In the building?
We meet actually in the new space. It's called the B. Mayer Room.
Okay.
Because she was the one that gave us the opportunity to have our space. And it's in the back northwest corner of the building.
Okay.
On the first floor.
I had to think up for a second.
Yeah. So if you're going to the cafeteria, you got to keep on going, and then you'll run into us.
Okay. Literally and figuratively.
Yes.
Just call the number at 312-997-3670, mm-hmm. or the main number?
The main number.
Which is 312-666-1331, and ask for the seniors program.
Correct.
Sounds like a plan.
I do email. The website has my contact information on it as well.
Right. And it's, let's see if I get it right. It's Lorraine.O'Donnell@ChicagoLighthouse.com .org.
You got it.
Yeah.
That's right.
Cool. Thanks for coming in.
Well, thank you for having me. I love having the seniors here. We are having fun and being strong.
That's what it's all about.
That's right.
Okay, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
We'll be back with more on the show right after this.
Okay, so just type the job website address here. That's it. Then you enter what job you're looking for there.
Electrician.
This is Peter. Recently, he got help going on the internet for the first time to look for a new job.
Okay, then you just hit search and...
In the past, Peter's gotten work through people he knew, but he heard there were more jobs online.
There we go.
These are all for me?
Uh-huh.
Really?
He He had no idea just how many.
I can't believe it. This one looks good.
Peter is thinking the internet might be for him after all.
And this is just one website.
Wow. Why didn't I do this sooner?
See what the internet can help you do at everyoneon.org or call 1-855-387-9166 to find a free training class near you. Brought to you by Connect, Compete, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everybody. That was actually a great segment that Bill had. I enjoy the senior program quite a bit. Not that I'm a senior. I still got quite a few years. I'm still a youngin. But it ends up that I've met quite a few of them, and they are an awesome group of people. I've actually sat in the lobby with them a few times waiting for our rides, and you know, we've had some great conversations. And so we actually touch a lot of people, and they come from far and wide to come to the senior program here at the Lighthouse. But what is awesome and about the senior program is that really they cover a wide variety of things, and it's a lot of different activities that they actually have that you can be involved in. Sandy, have you had any interaction with the senior program at all?
Yeah, when I started here as an intern, actually, the seniors program was housed up here upstairs, right by Chris Radio, and I got to interact with a lot of them, and mm-hmm. you know, it's a very, you know, it's a nice group. You can learn a lot from them. You know, I think we learn from each other, you know,
right.
in general. You know, so this is just a brief, you know, snippet of the different services, you know, as Bill covered on the segment.
And we actually have a segment coming up that you did with, you said Chris...
Christopher Rodriguez. Mm-hmm. So he's the director of public policy at the National Disability Institute, and he actually shares information about the Achieving a Better Life Experience Act, or the ABLE Act for sure. In this act, it's a comprehensive act that was just recently signed into law about 2 years ago from President Obama, and it will afford greater independence to people with disabilities. And to tell us more about that, let's listen to this interesting interview from Christopher Rodriguez.
Hello, everyone. This is Sandy Murillo, and welcome to another edition of Sandy's View. A lot of people have probably heard about the ABLE Act. It relates to people with disabilities and to people with that receive Social Security or other benefits because of their disabilities. We have covered Social Security topics in the past. And to tell us more about what the ABLE Act is Chris Rodriguez, and he is from the National Disability Institute. Chris, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi, Sandy. Thank you so much for having me today and helping shed some light and spread some information about a fairly exciting new piece of legislation that became law about 2 years ago. It was actually signed into law December 19th of 2014, and it's called the Stephen Beck Jr. Achieving a Better Life Experience Act, or ABLE Act. National Disability Institute, which is a D.C.-based disability-related national organization, soon after the law was passed, decided to establish what's called the ABLE National Resource Center, which is a collaborative of about 25 of the country's largest disability-related organizations. And we really wanted the purpose of the Resource Center to be able to assist any stakeholders that are included in the ABLE space with implementation and information so that folks would be able to appreciate the law and get involved.
Yeah, Chris, and I know that, like you said, this the ABLE Act is fairly new, and a lot of people have probably heard of it or have gotten mm-hmm. Different information about it. Can you give us the basics about what the ABLE Act is?
Right, absolutely. So the ABLE Act allows states to build what are called ABLE programs, which allow certain people with disabilities to save money in tax-advantaged savings accounts without having to worry about losing their publicly funded benefits such as Medicaid or Supplemental Security Income. Mm-hmm. And the funds in these accounts are to be used for what's called disability-related expenses that the beneficiary or the person with a disability, who's also the account owner, may incur as a result of having a disability. So I guess what's significant... Oh, go ahead, Sandy.
And just what would some examples of those expenses be? Could you give us some examples?
Absolutely. So really what the definition of what a qualified disability related expense is, it's any expense related to the beneficiary's disability that is for their benefit and that helps them increase or maintain their health, independence, or quality of life. And the law explicitly lays out some different types of what I call buckets or kind of areas in which these expenses might fall. And they're fairly exhaustive. They include education, housing, transportation, employment and training supports, assistive technology, personal supports and services, healthcare expenses, financial management, administrative services, and many other expenses. So it's fairly broad in terms of what an individual can spend these funds on.
And now people might be wondering, you know, how does this, you know, why is it so important to people with disabilities? And earlier you mentioned Medicaid, supplemental security income. Can you talk about how this will positively affect people that are on these programs?
Right. Right. So as you probably know, Sandy, there are millions of individuals with disabilities and their families actually depend on a wide array of various public benefits for income, health care, food, and housing assistance. And in these particular programs, eligibility for many of them, including Supplemental Security Income, SNAP, and Medicaid, require meeting a means or resource test that limits eligibility to individuals who report more than $2,000 worth of cash savings or retirement funds. So what this basically means is that for people with disabilities to utilize programs such as Medicaid, which provides extremely important and vital supports and services to people with disabilities, they can't have more than $2,000 at any given time or $2,000 worth of assets at any given time, or else those supports and services provided through those what are called means-tested federal programs can be taken away. So for the first time in many circumstances, the ABLE Act allows these folks to save well above that $2,000 mark as long as the funds are in the ABLE account without jeopardizing their eligibility for those vital supports and services provided by those federally funded means-tested programs.
Mm-hmm. And now you were briefly started discussing the specifics about the ABLE accounts. Can you talk a little more about, you know, how much can be saved per year, the requirements?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So there are a few caps related to ABLE accounts, and some of the important ones I can review very quickly. So anybody can contribute into a person's ABLE account. That includes friends, that includes family, that includes the beneficiary or the person with a disability themselves can contribute money into their own ABLE account, perhaps as a result of employment. But all those contributions combined in any given tax year cannot exceed $14,000. So as an example, I have a brother that lives down in Texas who actually has an ABLE account. So let's say that I decided to contribute, let's say, $1,000 into his account, and my grandparents decided to contribute $4,000 into his account, and then my parents decided to contribute $9,000. So that totals $14,000. So when all those funds have been deposited into his account, no more contributions can be made until the following tax year. So the tax year is from January 1 all the way to December 31st. So that's one limit.
Mm-hmm.
Another limit is an overall account limit, which means that once the account hits that point, no more contributions can be made until the account falls back below that point. And that is determined by what's called the limit for whatever state that the person is enrolled in that program, their 529 college savings limit. And what that typically is somewhere between $300 and all the way up to, it can be as much as $550,000. So anywhere from about $300,000 to $550,000, depending on which state's program that you're in. Of course, I don't think, you know, folks at this point need to take that into consideration too much, because again, at $14,000 a year, and that's only if a person can max out the contributions per year, it's going to take some time to reach those other caps as well.
Sure.
So that's something that's important to recognize, that's associated with the program.
Now, about the disability requirement, can people have acquired their disability at any age? Are there certain age restrictions? How does that work?
Right. So the ABLE Act allows certain people with disabilities to open up an ABLE account. And there's a reason why I say certain people with disabilities as opposed to all people with disabilities. Mm-hmm. And that's because the ABLE Act actually limits eligibility to individuals with significant disabilities with an age of onset of their disability prior to their 26th birthday. So that means in order to be eligible for an ABLE account, you had to first experience your disability before your 26th birthday. That doesn't mean that you can't be, like in my brother's circumstance, 35 and still open up an account, because he was born with his disability, so clearly it started before his 26th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
once a person has that, so everybody that could obtain eligibility needs to check that box off, right?
Sure.
And once they've checked that box off, then it moves to a second criteria that also has to be met, and it relates to the severity of the disability. And what that basically says is, provided that you meet the age criteria, the onset of 26 or before, and you're also currently a beneficiary of either SSI or SSDI, basically meaning that you've applied for those benefits and the Social Security Administration has found that you meet their definition of disability, then you're good to go. Then you can proceed with opening up an account in whichever ABLE program, of which there's currently 23, that you think best meets your needs. Now, let's say that you meet the age requirement, meaning, again, that you had first experienced your disability prior to age 26, but for whatever reason, you're not a beneficiary currently of SSI or SSDI. You may still be eligible to open up an account, but you would have to get what's called a disability certification. And that, what that entails is going to a physician and having the physician sign off stating that you meet a certain level of severity related to your disability, which is described actually in the law.
Mm-hmm. No, and that's great that you bring that point up, because some people might be wondering, you know, do I have to be on SSI or SSDI right. or receive Medicaid to be able to apply? And you mentioned that there are 23 states that are currently accepting ABLE applicants?
Right. So what the federal law did was it allows states to build these programs, but it does not actually obligate them to do so. So mm-hmm. states have to elect on their own through their own state legislators and legislatures to build these programs, of which currently 23 states have launched ABLE programs across the country, and we expect that number to grow over the next few months and into 2018 as well. It's important to note, a lot of people think that you have to enroll in your own state's program, and in fact, that's actually not true. Provided that a program is taking national enrollment, of which the vast majority of those 23 programs are, then you can actually enroll, provided that you meet the eligibility criteria, in any program, regardless of where you actually live. So as another example, again, my brother who lives in Texas is eligible to open up an ABLE account. However, right now, Texas hasn't launched their program, so he decided to actually enroll in a different state's program.
Mm-hmm.
It's also important to note that, again, using him as an example, once Texas gets up and running, or if he feels that any other state that has national enrollment better meets his needs, then an individual is allowed to transfer from one program to another.
Okay, well, that's great information, and I know that for our local listeners here in Chicago and Illinois is one of the states that currently allows individuals to open ABLE accounts.
Absolutely, yes.
And speaking of opening accounts, how can people, you know, once they know, okay, I meet all the requirements, I'm disabled before age 26, how can people open an account?
Right. So right now, and this is a measure that the states wanted to implement in order to keep costs as low as possible to make sure that folks can enroll in this program and have financial accessibility to opening a program. The enrollment is done completely online at this point. So I would suggest that folks go to our ABLE National Resource Center website, which is at www.able, that's A-B-L-E, nrc.org, and on there we have a map of the United States, and it differentiates by color which states have launched programs and which haven't. If you click on any given state, it'll take you to another page that has further information about that particular program, including that program's website. So once you figure out which program you'd like, you click on their website, it takes you to that state's particular website, and then you can enroll through that particular page.
And I know that the National ABLE Resource Center, you have different information as far as what the ABLE Act is, and like you mentioned, how to apply. So, you know, for our listeners who would like to find out more information, you can go on the website and learn more about this new and great opportunity for people with disabilities in the United States. Chris, is there anything else you'd like to add or share?
Just that, you know, again, encouraging folks to check out the website. There's a number of different resources on the website related to ABLE. We have videos up there. We have different printouts in case perhaps you're looking to distribute information about ABLE at a conference or through your organization. There's archived webinars. There's also a listserv, actually, where you can sign up on the website there, and you'll get email alerts in case anything comes up. As an example, you know, Louisiana just launched their program last week, so we sent a blast out letting everybody know about that. So any ABLE-related news you'll be receiving so long as you sign up for that. Additionally, we're going to be doing a National ABLE Awareness Month in the month of August. So that'll primarily be done through our social media. So I encourage folks who are on Facebook or who are on Twitter to please follow us at, again, ABLE National Resource Center. If you just type that in the search engine there in Facebook or Twitter, we should pop up, and please follow us and like our page so that you can get as much information related to ABLE as possible.
Great. Well, Chris, can you please repeat the website again for people that didn't catch it the first time?
Sure, absolutely. It's www.ablenrc.org. So that's ABLENRC.org.
Great. Well, everyone, this was Christopher Rodriguez from the National ABLE Resource Center, which is part of the National Disability Institute. Chris, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Sandy. I appreciate the opportunity to spread the word about this great new law.
Thank you.
1 in 6 of the wounded U.S. soldiers evacuated from Iraq and Afghanistan battle zones suffered eye injuries. That's the highest rate of eye injuries since the Civil War. The National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, NLS, part of the Library of Congress, is stepping up to help. NLS works with military hospitals, rehab centers, and groups such as the Blinded Veterans Association to make sure that service members who have sacrificed so much for their country can still experience the pleasures of reading. Through the free NLS Talking Book Program, eligible veterans have access to thousands of bestsellers, biographies, westerns, self-help books, and more, and a variety of magazines. Veterans receive priority service from NLS, but any U.S. resident who is blind, has low vision, or cannot hold a book because of a physical illness or disability may sign up for the program. To learn more about what NLS can do for you or a friend or loved one, visit www.loc.gov/NLS or call 1-888-NLS-READ.
Well, that was a really good interview there, Sandy. I know the ABLE Act has a lot to do with they have these ABLE accounts now, which is actually pretty exciting to think about that us who have like Social Security or on SSI having an opportunity to save some extra money, SSDI, to be able to go towards, you know, some of our living expenses. That's pretty exciting to think about that, you know, our government's actually thinking about, hey, maybe they do need to save and have a backup plan just like everybody else does.
No, those are good points, Brett. And, you know, as Chris was saying, this will, you know, it has a great potential for people with disabilities because, as, you know, those of us with disabilities know, you know, there are different expenses like assistive technology or transportation or even expenses like in, you know, your case for a service animal. You know, this relatively new act, the ABLE Act, I think it'll help tremendously.
And I think it just gives it ease of mind to even the families that are really worried about what's going to happen, you know, in the day that comes when the parents aren't around. How is my kid going to be able to survive? Now this actually gives a chance for the parents to know, at least financially, there's some backup for their kid to be able to take care of themselves for a while.
Totally. You know, that's a very valid concern on the parents' part. And, you know, it's great to know that this new legislation, this new act will ease that burden somewhat. But, you know, moving on, Brett, you know, there are different technologies that are coming up, you know, not just assistive technology that helps people with disabilities do everyday things, but even medical advances that will potentially help people who are severely visually impaired. And I know that right now a big focus is on research that will essentially restore some vision to people with vision loss. I know you had a very interesting interview with Dr. Silva a while ago about this new device. It's called NanoVision, correct?
Yeah, the company that actually is helping Dr. Silva, he's actually from the University of California in San Diego. They're working together to actually make a device that actually would be implanted onto the retina itself. But Dr. Silver, Silva can actually explain it a heck of a lot better than I can, since he's the one working on it. So let's just listen to what he has to say, and we'll be right back.
Hello there, everybody. My name is Brett Shishkoff, and we actually have a couple guests with us today that I'm really excited about. It almost feels like we're in the future. We're going to be dealing with some nanotechnology today. I have Professor Silva here, from University of California in San Diego, and then we also have Scott Thurgood from NanoVision, and both of them are kind of going to go over a brief kind of introduction of themselves and how the project is has gotten started. Dr. Silver, would you like to start us off?
Sure, thank you. Thanks for the invitation and for having us. I'm Gabriel Silva. I'm a professor of and vice chair of the Department of Bioengineering at the University of California, San Diego. I'm also a professor of neurosciences and have a number of other appointments in nanotechnology and nanoengineering and some others. And I'm a neurophysiologist by training, and we do theoretical and computational neuroscience too. And nanotechnology to both understand how the brain represents and processes information, as well as developing technologies to interface with the brain.
Okay, and Scott, how about you introduce yourself and give us a little rundown of what you and NanoVision are doing these days.
Sure, Scott Thurgood, CEO of NanoVision. We're headquartered in La Jolla, and thank you for having us. We're working on some pretty exciting technology. There's a lot of people who are suffering from retinal diseases for which there's no cure, and they eventually go blind. And so we embarked upon a project 4.5 years ago together with Gabe and others at UCSD. Form NanoVision to develop a surgically implantable nano-engineered retinal implant that would restore useful vision to patients afflicted with these diseases. And
We have been moving very, very quickly, and we are now focused on a human trial within 18 months. And we're on top of the field, and so we know, you know, who all is out there. And we're leading the field with our approach to this in terms of spatial resolution and sensitivity and all that kind of stuff. But we have a lot of different things that we're doing that we're focused on the patient and the ability to, you know, adjust the implant to the state of disease progression, for example. Uh-huh. And we're very excited with the prospect of restoring useful vision to blind people with these diseases.
Can you kind of give us a little rundown of how exactly the nanotechnology exactly works, or would that be better for Professor Silver to explain?
I think we both can cover that.
Okay.
You know, as I mentioned, it's a nano-engineered technology, and these nanowires are photosensitive. And so when photons hit the nanowires, there's a charge, and then we transfer into Gabe's world where, you know, and what happens with that charge. So maybe, Gabe, you can take it from there and talk about what goes on in the retina once the nanowires have been activated.
Sure, yeah. So under normal conditions, light hitting the photoreceptor neurons in the retina, that light energy gets converted into a neurochemical signal. That's the phototransduction process. And then that signal propagates through the rest of the retinal circuitry, down the optic nerve, and eventually to visual cortex, where the perception of the visual world is generated. In degenerative retinal disorders, those photoreceptor neurons die away, they degenerate. And so even though the remaining retina, the remaining retinal circuitry is still there and more or less intact, there's some changes that occur because of the disease process. They're still there, but there's no neurons to be able to sense the light in the first place. And so as Scott just described, the technology that we've been developing essentially is a replacement for those photoreceptor neurons. And those nanowires inherently, as a fundamental physics property of the materials, convert light that hits the nanowires into not into a chemical signal, but into an electric output, if you will, that then electrically stimulates the remaining neurons in the retinal circuitry in an attempt to recreate that phototransduction process.
Okay. So then how far has it come so far? Like, have you been able to tell, is it mainly light perception people are getting back, or is there some colors? Like, what exactly at this point are you noticing from your research?
Well, we know we can't tell what the what perception will be until we actually start putting these devices into humans.
Okay.
But we do know that the devices are generating currents, and we've done substantial electrophysiology in animal models that are able to objectively tell us, because we can measure it. Objectively tell us that the outputs being delivered by the nanowire devices are being detected by the visual cortex in the brain. And because we're able to measure those signals in the brain using a technique called visual evoked responses, essentially. So.
Okay, so then I'm kind of new to this, so what does it take for these projects to start having human testing to be able to get that feedback that, you know, how we would normally use it? Because myself, I'm blind, and so this is something I'm extremely interested in, of how long does that testing process and the hoops that you guys have to jump through, I'm sure, are quite a few. What does that look like normally?
Yeah. Well, I can cover that. So obviously there are regulations around any device or any drug in a human. And so we are following the guidelines that have been set by the FDA for ophthalmic devices. And it really boils down to heavily weighted criteria around safety and biocompatibility and toxicity and that kind of thing. And so, you know, we're very focused on that right now. And so all the testing that we're doing, of course, we developed our device to be, you know, using known biocompatible materials. But we're now focused on making sure the device has longevity in the body, because the body is actually a pretty harsh environment for electronics, because it's a saline environment. And so we're very focused on the packaging and encapsulation and so on of this technology. And then within 18 months, we will embark upon a human study. And that human study may be in the United States, it may be outside the United States. We're currently evaluating our options in that regard.
Okay. So then, what does the future look like for this project? Of like, what are your guys' goals to hopefully see this getting into the general public, that they can start to maybe see this? Do you guys have a time frame that you're shooting for?
Yeah, well, obviously we need to show efficacy in humans, and in parallel with that, we've just begun the process of initiating discussions with large companies who are in this field, who have a global footprint, who have interest in this area. And the objective would be to have a strategic partnership in some way with one or more of these companies, so that this can get in the hands of, or in the eyes, actually, of all the blind people around the world. And, you know, that's the fastest way to accelerate this.
Okay. So then, people who are blind, is there a specific thing that you're looking for, because I know some of these projects you needed to have vision at some point for the brain to be able to work with some of this technology. So is there a restriction on who this would work for, or how exactly does that work?
Well, yeah. You know, Gabe, you can talk about our criteria, but yeah. Basically, you know, we're going to be sensible about this in terms of, you know, the inclusion criteria for the people that we would work with initially, and that person would be completely blind in one eye. As long as we know this is a safe device, you know, the downside is very low. And hopefully the upside is huge, so we can restore some degree of useful vision to these people. Gabe, if you want to talk further about that, to what you mentioned some of our other thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, this device is intended to restore sight to sort of a specific population of patients because of the way that it operates. So it's only designed, it's been designed to essentially replace that phototransduction function. So there's many, many ways that blindness can be caused in different stages of the visual system, from the photoreceptors at the very beginning of the entire process, throughout the different parts of the brain that participate ultimately in the formation of the perception of vision. And these types of devices are designed really to replace that phototransduction function. So if a patient has a different issue that's leading to blindness, or as you alluded to, if in cases where they were born blind because of something elsewhere in the brain, those are very different causes that wouldn't be addressed by this type of technology.
Okay. Well, I want to thank both of you guys for coming on and talking about your project. This is really exciting stuff, and I definitely look forward to seeing how it continues to improve and moves forward. Do you guys have any last comments that you want to share with anyone? If people want to look this information up, do you guys have websites or any type of information that people could check out themselves?
Sure. It's nanovisionbio.com. And just to add one last point into your last question, we're really focused on age-related macular degeneration, retinitis pigmentosa, and diabetic macular edema. Those are the main retinal diseases that cause the loss of photoreceptors. So that's really where our focus is right now. And if you go to our website, it tells you a lot more about nanovision and our technology, and there's even some images of what we're doing. And I'm happy to answer any questions. If anybody, you know, wants to email us, we'll be right back to them. Thanks very much for the opportunity today.
Thank you. How about you, Professor Gabriel? Anything that you'd like to add at the end?
No, I think Scott summed it up really well. We're exceedingly excited about what we're doing and the potential of this technology, and that a lot to a significant degree has to do with the engineering behind it. A comment that Scott made right at the beginning, which is really critical, is, you know, the ability, for example, of this technology to be fine-tuned to the stimulation requirements of individual patients, for example. The different patients are different, and the disease progression within the same patient changes over time. And so these are some of the engineering innovations in the technology that, you know, really think sets us apart.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Like I said, right off the start, it feels like we're living in the future, and the future is now, apparently. And I definitely am excited for what's to come. And my name is Brett Shishkoff. Thank you to Dr. Silva and Mr. Thurgood for joining us today. I will definitely be back again soon with another interesting topic, ranging from the theater realm all the way to the medical side. Until next time, everyone have a great rest of your week. Well, we're back. And the technology that we were just listening to about nanovision and what Dr. Silva is doing is really, really awesome. And I can't wait to see how it continues to move forward. And hopefully we will start to see, with all of the different researches that are going on, the restoration of sight for those who have lost it. I know I'm one of them that every time I read up on a new surgery or technology that's coming out that could potentially give me back my vision again, I am always excited to see the advances that are coming down the line. And what's actually really exciting is there's advances, like Sandy said earlier, not just in the medical side of things, but also in assistive technology and just technology in general on a daily basis. And we actually are moving on. We have to say goodbye to Tom Persky. He has retired with his wife, and they're moving back to Arizona.
That's right. But
alas, we have backup coming in.
The show must go on.
The show must go on, and we have backup coming in, and we have Luke Scribbins, who actually sat down with our own Brian Hawkins to just talk about what's new going on in assistive technology. Have you met Luke yet there, Sandy?
Plenty of times. I've worked with him closely for our blog, and, you know, I've met with him. For all the ladies out there, you will love the accent. He's got a new... You'll hear something different with Luke, and I know that you'll love that UK accent Luke has.
Yep. I've met him as well. He is a very, very nice guy, and he's very helpful and extremely knowledgeable. So even though Tom will be missed greatly by all of us, I think the segment that Luke and Brian are about to partake in is in very, very good hands. So why don't we just take a listen and have the start of a great new endeavor with Luke Scribbins and Brian Hawkins.
Luke Scribbins is here, and he'll be talking about everything that has to do with adaptive technology. Welcome, Luke. How are you?
I'm doing good, Brian. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Excellent.
Fine indeed. Now, exactly what is your title now?
My title is Assistive Technology Manager, so I'm trying to fill the large shoes of Tom Persky.
Okay, and they were large.
Oh yeah, they were very large indeed. Yeah.
And now you're obviously, we can tell by the accent, you're from England. What part of England are you from?
I'm from Yorkshire in the north of England.
Ah.
And I've been in the States for over 6 years now. The time's flown by. So
right, and you're the person, the go-to person in the store for folks who need demonstrations now. And
yes, if anybody wants to look at any of the assistive technologies, I am available. We have got everything from small handheld electronic magnifiers up to the latest headborne electronic magnification devices and everything in between. So if anybody wants to check those out, then please get in touch with me.
Okay, and you can give out a number. We'll get to that. But speaking of assistive technology, we haven't had a chance to really examine anything. So I imagine the way that market is, there's probably 1,000 new products out.
Yeah, we get new stuff pretty much every week, so it can be pretty difficult to keep up with all the latest developments.
All right.
Some of the cool things that we've had in recently have been a new CCTV called the Mezzo, and what we like about this is it's compact. It can fit on a desk, but you can fold it away if you're not using it. And it's pretty low priced as far as these things go. So for the smaller model, you're looking under $1,900, and it works really well. So we like that. One of the other trends that we've seen is some electronic magnification devices you wear on your head. And one of the hottest new ones is called the Iris Vision.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe Thomas talked about this before.
Mm-hmm.
It's a virtual reality headset, and you put it on, and it allows you to see the real world and magnify it. And you have these large screens in front of your eyes, and everything's really bright, and it looks great. Now, last week I chatted with one of the developers and saw an update of the software that's going to be released in a couple of months. And it's pretty amazing what they've done with it. It was already good, but they've increased the brightness of the image, they've increased the sharpness of the image, and it looks incredible. So I'm really very excited about this device. I think it's going to be a big game changer for a lot of people, and I definitely encourage people to give me a call and give it a try.
All right, and what would that number be if they wanted to reach you?
So if you want to schedule an appointment, you can call me at 312-997-3649. That's my direct line, and I would be happy to talk to anybody about their technology needs and schedule appointments with people who want to come and see stuff.
Okay. And what else do you have that's come through the pipeline lately?
We've got a new service available, and it's in-home training service or training at the lighthouse. So we want to introduce a service whereby we can train people on their technology, and that could be something like learning how to use your iPad and the built-in accessibility and the different apps which might help you, or it could be training you on how to use your computer. It could be training you on how to better use your electronic magnifier. Pretty much anything that you need training on technology-wise, we can help you out with that. We have in-home training, and that would be $60 an hour, and training at the lighthouse would be $35 an hour, and we can do that at either our downtown location or our Glenview location. And I think you will find that we are very patient trainers. We will work with you to meet your goals, and hopefully we'll have a bit of fun along the way as well.
All right. Now, you're still conducting roadshows, so when's the next one of those?
Yep, so we have two roadshows coming up. We have one August 30th, and that's at Wheeling Township. The address is 1616 North Arlington Heights Road. And the second one is October 5th at Palos Hills Community Center, and that's 8455 West 103rd Street. I'm hoping that we can schedule some in September also, but as of yet, we haven't got those set in. But hopefully, we're going to get some scheduled there. So keep your eyes on the website, and those will go up if we manage to get something scheduled.
All right. So the voice you're hearing is from Luke Scriven, and he's the new adaptive technology guru on the Beacon. And we'll be talking to him every week, and I think that'll do it. And again, you want to give your number for folks who want to get in touch with you, have any questions or anything?
Sure. So again, my direct line is 312-997-3649. And my email, if you would prefer to contact me that way, is luke.scriven@chicagolighthouse.org.
He's Luke. I'm Brian Hawkins. This is The Beacon.
Well, Brett, the hour went by really fast. It went flying, and that about does it for us. I want to thank Dr. Janet Slick, our president and CEO, and Brian Hawkins, our director and engineer here at Chris Radio, for all of their help. And of course, Bill Jurek, host of The Beacon. So, and thank you most importantly to everyone for tuning in online. As usual, you can catch our podcasts
on chicagolighthouse.org/radio. Also, if you'd like to get a hold of me, if you have any questions or concerns, or ideas for new content that you would like to see, you can contact me at Brett, B-R-E-T-T, dot Shishkoff, S-H-I-S-H-K-O-F-F, at chicagolighthouse.org.
Or you can contact me, Sandy Murillo, at S-A-N-D-Y dot M-U-R-I-L-L-O at chicagolighthouse.org. Well, thank you, everyone, and have a great rest of your week.